And we are back with an all new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison the Fourth.
What happened? Something went awry? I'm Louis Vertel, still the first and the only. Why are you the fourth today?
Well, I died this past weekend, Louis.
Oh.
Because let me tell you something. There's a new Saw movie out, and I didn't know there was like a Saw community in the way that there's like a...
Can I discourage a Saw community? I would prefer there not be one.
When I say Saw community, I mean the way that if you bring up like Scream, you just say the word like you say Sydney in public, and then like 10 gays will like pop up and want to talk to you about the Scream franchise, mm-hmm. you know? And I did not realize that that also exists for Saw, really, because I never really paid attention to them. I saw the first one, not even in theaters. I think I watched it with a friend once. But 10 was coming out, and, you know, we were in the waning days of the strike. The WGA strike is over. You're back to work.
I have to tell you, it's painful. Remember when I wanted to go back to work? No, I'm done. Sorry. I'm bad at this. Sorry.
I'm back to not working like I was when the strike happened.
Slay, boots.
So I'm like, oh, at some point I'll have to go on job interviews again. What's that like? But I was like, you know what? I got time. I will watch all 9 Saw movies and then go see Saw X. That was a lot.
I have to say, I mean, like, they are among the least critically acclaimed movies and franchise collectively that have ever existed. Like, the Ernest movies are, like, competing for last place.
They're gory. They are violent. They're misogynistic. They're nasty. But also very funny, some of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't know if you've seen the first one is like a good, competent horror film. The second one, I would say, is, to compare it to Scream, like very Scream 2 light. It's funnier, it's bigger, there's more cast in it. And that is actually my favorite one. Was my favorite one until I saw Saw 10, which is Saw X. It's kind of amazing.
And what's the X factor, if you will?
It's amazing in the way that it's a movie, you know? So the main problem with the Saw franchise, and what sort of makes it funny too, is the fact that Jigsaw, the killer, you know, he has cancer, he has brain cancer, and, you know, now he's getting his revenge.
We've gone too far with this fucker, okay.
That's how the first movie starts.
Oh, okay, you know, right.
He's getting revenge on people who, you know, have done misdeeds.
Got
you
it.
Know, like it'll be like rapists and murderers, predatory lenders, real estate agents, people who are in a love triangle with one another. That's okay, one of the plots of like Saw 3D, which is very
stupid. I was with him on murderers. Okay. No, just like person speaking too loudly at Starbucks.
But anyway, he dies at the end of Saw 4. Mm. And so what happens is the rest of the franchise is basically sort of... This movies have always played with time. You know, like the second movie, Donnie Wahlberg's son is kidnapped because he's a cop. And he's like trying to get his kid, and he's watching him like on a TV screen, like in one of Jigsaw's traps. And then the twist at the end ends up being that like, that was already filmed, and his son was actually hidden in the room where he was in the first place.
Ah, got it.
Yeah. So it's really about games and following Jigsaw's rules. And if you sort of do what he says, you'll come out unscathed. But people always try to beat the games, and then they end up dying, et cetera, whatever. Saw 10X takes place between the first film and the second film.
Ah, we're doing this shit. Got it. Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, you know, light spoilers here, but, you know, it's actually, it feels almost like an A24 film, which sounds silly, but, you know, it's like, it's an elevated horror film, which is interesting for the franchise. It truly starts out with him in sort of like a cancer support group, dealing with the fact that he has cancer. that he's dying soon. Someone in the cancer support group gets this miracle treatment from like a doctor who's, you know, outside of the US because of the FDA, et cetera, whatever, and gives Jigsaw the number for this place. Mm. And then Jigsaw goes, and of course it ends up being a scam. And then it turns into
they try mayhem. It with Jigsaw. Yeah.
But I mean, one of the like highlights of the series is like Tobin Bell, who plays Jigsaw. And he's always been very good and sort of elevates the franchise, but this film shows that he's like, he's a really fucking good actor.
Oh, wow. I don't think of this as a showcase for any personalities whatsoever. So that's really shocking.
Yeah, it's a big showcase for his acting. What's interesting is a lot of the reviews mention the fact that, you know, like they wonder how fans of the franchise, like just mainstream fans of the franchise will respond to this. And it did well at the box office and it's done well globally, actually. Just mostly because it takes like 40 minutes, you know, or so before the plot even kicks in and there's the first murder.
And I assume we're going to get 10 more of these movies too. I had no idea cancer was a huge part of this. He's Susan G. Komen for you.
This one really just feels like a thriller too. And it focuses on him as sort of this anti-hero protagonist getting revenge on people. Whereas the other movies have always involved cops and a procedural element. So there's always this like push and pull of you're watching the traps and the games and the murders and having fun with that. And then there's like this boring police procedural that's also happening in the film. Mm. And there's no fucking police procedural in this one because, you know, ACAB.
Precisely. I am weary, of course, of tripping into October, which is a part of my least favorite season. But I will always watch something usually old. I mean, I can tap into some new horror movies too, but like if you're interested in seeing something that has a thriller element and a little bit of a spooky thing that is in horror, I recommend the movie Sleuth, which was remade horribly in the 2000s. Mm. But the original with Michael Caine and Laurence Olivier, both nominated for the Best mm-hmm. Actor Oscar, very rare. That is a fun, puzzly movie. Kind of, it takes place in a quizzical, strange, whimsical mansion, and it's about games and can you solve the riddles and things like that. So in a way, it's the original
Jane Lynch's house?
Yeah, that's right. or Ellen's house, Ellen's Game of Games, which was basically Sleuth, if you never saw that movie.
What was Jane Lynch's game?
Wait, Celebrity Game Night?
Hollywood Game Night, and I visited that set.
Oh, yeah, and there was a band there, and they would play, like little mini games and stuff, yeah. And you'd be like, oh, Ellie Kemper, you're crazy.
I was a part of some, like, writing program, or, like, NBC or whatever, years ago. And one of the things was they took us to Hollywood Game Night
and set. Jane Lynch lingers over Jane you, Lynch. And she's 6 foot seven, yes.
Yeah, we played, like, a game with her, like, so.
Oh, wow.
It was fun.
Oh, cute. And now, of course, she hosts The Weakest Link. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe this Saw movie is in my immediate future if it's like tolerable to watch and it seems like there's actual acting in it.
I honestly think that you would like it. And I think that, or at least respect what it's doing.
That's nice that you walk that back right from the start. Good. Okay.
And I like Tobin Bell. I honestly think that he's a very good actor. Great actor, honestly. And I would hope that maybe this could get him into some other acting roles.
Prestige-y,
I guess,
beyond just playing movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, he's been in films, you know? Like, he played like the FBI agent in Mississippi Burning. Mm. He's been in, like, he's played like bit parts, you know, and like Malice, Goodfellas, like Sophie's Choice, like, you know, like he's played these bit parts and then this was really sort of his breakout role. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that he has this sort of like menacing quality to him, but also a very sort of like sad humanity that's like behind his eyes too. Like, you're very sympathetic to him too. So I would love to see like where he could take that.
All right.
You know, I'm not calling him Daniel Day-Lewis. But you know, it's sort of a quality that you see in some of his like darker, sort of sad roles.
All right. No, fabulous. All right, great. Well, as we're heading into Prestige season, I will be thinking about him and the Saw franchise, which you love. Great. What the hell are we talking about today?
Wow, we've got an iconic guest this week.
I have to say, we really do. Like, sometimes people are so iconic to the point where I'm actually in pain. Like, why do we get to meet them? Obviously, we don't deserve it.
We've collected our first of, hopefully, we catch all five.
Yeah.
Just like Pokemon. Jerry Halliwell Horner is here this week. Ginger Spice herself.
There are a few celebrities where I can remember specifically the first time I ever saw them. I remember her doing an interview with them, you know, 1997, when they happened, kind of when I'm first becoming aware of music and pop culture altogether. And I think a lot of people in my generation, Spice Girls really instigated that, you know, lifelong relationship. And just knowing immediately from the way she would like scream answers in an interview that she was rad as fuck. Like, you like, oh, that's like a fun adult, you know, like that, you know, that's like kind of the age when you're sort of like, does being an adult suck? And then you see people like Ginger Spice and you're like, fuck yes, yes, I'm on my way.
Yeah.
I'm going to pinch Prince William's ass too, or whatever she did. Prince Charles's ass. Yeah.
It was very hard to call her Jerry during the interview.
It was not hard for me. It was hard for you.
Ginger! Anyway, she is here. And so we are also going to talk about our favorite, because I don't think we've had this conversation before, our favorite girl groups.
Oh, yeah. Which is interesting conversation because, and we'll get into this, girl groups, almost by definition, are short-lived. You know, if somebody gets sick of it and then they break up, or, you know, they only have a couple of albums. So I feel like they really concentrate their energy into making a couple of banger songs. And then, generally speaking, they move on. But you're left with these awesome songs, ultimately.
Yeah. And then there's some weird-ass dating shows on right now.
Yes.
Naked Attraction and The Golden Bachelor, confusing to me because I didn't know old people dated.
Right. Or knew each other or spoke.
Yeah. But you tell me about it.
Okay, great. Also, I mean, yeah, Naked Attraction is this long-running show on British TV, and then they added it to Max somewhat surreptitiously, and then it became the most popular show on the network. So we'll see, you know, do dating shows gain something from us just checking out a pair of balls before we make our decision? Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's just because In Just Like That isn't airing at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, what else are we going to watch on that?
Honestly, Naked Attraction should be called And Just Like That. Like, here it is, dick.
You just have Che Diaz wander through scenes, and it's basically the same show. All right, we will be right back with more Keep It. This week is Banned Book Week, and Cricket is using this time to say, how fucked up is it that we need to have something called Banned Book Week?
Isn't this America? You can show your support for authors and librarians by shopping new merch from the Crooked Store. They've got Are You Afraid of the Books tees that are perfect for spooky season, kids tees and onesies that say Read Me a Banned Book, and newly refreshed Free the Books merch. Whether you're a bookworm or just someone with a personal hatred for Ron DeSantis, woof, we got you. Now book it over to crooked.com/store to shop.
It's truly crazy we haven't touched on this topic in almost 300 episodes.
Jesus.
And this is number 298.
300 fucking episodes. What are we, Gunsmoke?
But as you should all know, we have a deep love and respect for girl groups. In honor of today's guest, the legendary Ginger Spice, we decided to do a tribute to girl groups. And Lewis, let me guess. Your favorite is The Shangri-Las.
No, well, The Shangri-Las really only have Leader of the Pack is not like a top tier girl group song for me. My favorite girl group, I will say Martha and the Vandellas are up there for me. Those are some, Dancing in the Street, that was the first girl group song I ever fell in love with because of, you guessed it, Sweatin' to the Oldies. And
and Heatwave, of course, which I first heard on several episodes of American Idol.
No, if you want to get eliminated on American Idol, you better sing Heatwave.
Sing Heatwave.
Yeah. You're trying to get out of there. You're like, I can't be at CBS Television City 1 second longer. I'm going to do Heatwave.
It's one of those songs that I sort of, I think I brought this up before with Bonnie Tyler's Holding Out for a Hero, where the BPM is just a little bit faster than the other songs of that era.
Yeah.
And I feel like whenever people try to sing Heatwave, they can't catch up with the lyrics.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, it's always like they're chasing the song.
Yeah.
And it's like, baby, that's why she had the Vandellas with her.
They were fast. Dancing in the Street, of course, written by Marvin Gaye. Before he emerged as a solo superstar. He's a fabulous songwriter.
Dancing in the Streets is pretty faggy. Right. So.
He did not strike me as
Marvin
gay. That just isn't his name. Right. Yes, gotcha.
Yeah.
No, if I had to pick...
The estate's going to come after me now.
Right. I mean, it must be said, if we're talking about hit rate of songs by a girl group, I mean... Well, I'll bring up the Supremes, who had the 12 number one hits. That's important. And we can pick a favorite song of theirs. Pussycat Dolls did not miss one time. Here's the problem with the Pussycat Dolls and why I think they couldn't last, though. They only made a star of one person in it. You know, I think the point of
That's
a girl
fair.
Group, generally speaking, if it's going to last even a second, is everybody's an avatar in the group. You know, like with boy bands, you know, like you had your personal favorite and you had your weird reasons for not picking Justin. You know what I mean? You're like, I have to like Lance for personal weird reasons. I don't know.
That's no one ever said that.
I think that did exist. I think a certain woman who was, you know, a bit self-conscious about, you know, macho swagger would pick a Lance. As her, you know what I'm saying? You had options.
These Grace Adlers.
Yes, precisely. But yes, if you will.
I get what you mean, though, because people make jokes about Destiny's Child, and they're always like, you know, Beyonce and them, you know, when people are being flippant.
Yeah.
But Beyonce, Kelly, Michelle, each had a very distinct personality within Destiny's Child.
Right.
You know what all three of them did? What all three of them brought to the table? The Pussycat Dolls was very much Nicole Scherzinger telling those bitches, do not sing into your mics.
No, also, yeah, right. Show up at dawn, learn the choreography, and get out of my way. Yeah. Well, also, of course, there's that famous Behind the Music where Nicole Scherzinger says the album was basically presented to the other girls who had not sung. That, the implication was they didn't sing on it, which is
Oh, my God, I love that one. It's a... They heard the album that day. They came into the studio and we played the album for them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Also, I think that might be the last episode of Behind the Music, and what a note to go out on. Her just selling that group out. But really, like all of their singles, starting with Don't Ya, into Stick With You, into Buttons, which I think might be their single best moment. But then even like the ballady stuff, like the I Hate This Part, like great song. And then they tried to come back with React, which is a song that is a 9, a 10, and we didn't respect it. I don't know why.
Well, baby, people were dying.
Oh, it was right at the beginning of COVID. Yeah. You're giving...
that song literally dropped. That song literally dropped when Wuhan was like, let's get it popping. Okay?
Said Wuhan.
Wuhan said, wait a minute.
When I grow up into the coronavirus, I don't want to hear any hits. You're giving the Willa Ford excuse, who's like, oh, I wasn't a big star because 9/11 happened. Obviously, no one was in the mood for Willa Ford anymore. That's one of the craziest sound bites we've ever heard in our lives. But I bring this up all the time. One of my favorite girl group songs of all time is from a group called Boy Crazy, which came out in the early 90s, British. And they had a song called That's What Love Can Do, which sounds like it should be a Kylie Minogue song because the people who wrote the song were Kylie Minogue's primary songwriters before that.
Could you get them back?
I was too hard on Tension last week. I think it's better than what you think, though it's not my favorite of hers.
I would say that I was too hard on it, but I have not listened to it all week.
It does feel like she needs to focus more on the hooks and less on the production, the ethereal quality of the production. Yes. Yeah.
There's several songs on it that will get added to playlists of mine that I'm sure I will listen to again and reevaluate like I did with Kiss Me Once. But it's not capturing me.
I know. Like, I would say I like Kiss Me Once more than that, and I was never like a huge fan of that album. That does have some bangers on it. Anyway.
But if you're speaking of British girl groups, obviously.
Oh, here we go.
Girls Aloud is iconic.
You know
like,
what?
You
know what is, I think, central to a lasting girl group? Attitude. Because it's like your ladies are coming together. You're presenting a point of view. We hate men at the moment. All these things we love. Call the Shots is the epitome of that feeling. Like we're all strutting together. And it's about us having a good time. And what, men?
And I also relate to not being able to speak French, but just letting the funky music do the talking.
Sad that you would think that, but okay.
I really like Girls Aloud. I mean, Sound of the Underground, Love Machine, they really had a lot of hits. And I mean, I had this whole period where I was like really into British girl groups. I think it happened because of like, you know, the DJ John Alley. And you know, he used to have his blog, John Alley's blog. And I feel like that was that mid like 2000s era where when songs would be leaking all the time, and like so they would just be like uploaded like the day that they leaked and stuff. Like he was also mixing in like British pop, etc. So that's how I got into Girls Aloud and like the Saturdays. And
you basically have to be like formally educated on them though, because they do not deliver that music to us. Like you would not know what Girls Aloud is. Like people still don't know who Cheryl Cole is here.
I mean, people barely know Little Mix. So
I feel
every time I meet a British person, like a gay out, and I'm referencing a Little Mix song that isn't Black Magic, they're like, how do you know that?
Which, speaking of other girl groups, how do you feel about Blackpink? Do you roll with Blackpink?
I was actually having this conversation with someone recently. So I've been down with K-pop since like 2011, when I first discovered the group Secret. I love them. And so I've been in and out of K-pop. You know, I think I've referenced before, like, I've loved Red Velvet, you know, I've loved K-pop. And Blackpink had this really big, bombastic moment, and like this big sort of moment where like everyone was into them. They had the documentary. They'd done Coachella twice. They headlined this year, and I saw them. Seeing them twice live, it's just like the songs are sort of very much the same to me. And they're all just sort of this like, how you like that? And like a screaming and like a bomb and like a bomb's going off and they're all doing the same choreography. And that was good for like a big sort of moment, but I just don't know where else it goes.
This is kind of the epitome of what I'm talking about, by the way. Like it's about attitude. And then you present the attitude, and then there's nothing really like else a girl group can do together. You know what I mean? Destiny fulfilled, if you will.
But right now, I'm sort of feeling like the people are really getting into like, I mean, you've heard New Jeans, like Super Shy, a fucking amazing song, and ETA from them. I think that like, you know, the left. Who's the people who sang that song? It's And then there's Left Right by XG. I feel like we're getting into other K-pop girl groups now. Blackpink, I feel like, sort of kicked that door open.
And of course, we love Sour Candy. Like, yes.
Yes, of course. Did they? Or maybe it was Gaga, because they released that banger-ass song during the pandemic, and then we never had it acknowledged ever again.
Right. No, it's my favorite thing they've ever done, I think. I do want to talk about Destiny's Child for a second. I do think it's unusual that they had these blockbuster albums, and then their two best songs were on their final and worst album, which is Lose My Breath and Soldier, to me, are the epitome of attitude. And then also, like, I love, like, the Needing a Man.
Destiny Fulfilled is their worst album?
Yes. You wouldn't say so?
Absolutely not.
What Jesse, is?
I would put just their first one.
With No 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 on it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What else you listen to on that album?
All right, yes. No 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 Part
Get
One.
Get on the Bus?
Yeah, yeah. All right. But that's like saying like, you know, Alanis Morissette's Canadian albums are her worst. It's like not even really part of the catalog.
Honestly, I mean, like there's Destiny's Fulfilled, and then obviously there's Writing on the Wall, which is their best.
Yeah.
And then there's Survivor, which is really amazing. But I feel like Destiny Fulfilled is
That has girl on it.
Straight through. Lose My Breath, Soldier. Cater to You? T-shirt?
Cater to
Is she the reason?
Neither of those. Okay.
Through With Love? If is an amazing fucking song. I love Destiny Fulfilled. That's probably actually my second favorite Destiny's Child album.
All right.
It's one of the ones I actually listen to the most.
Interesting. I fucking love Soldier. And also Lose My Breath. Just, yeah. The ladies dancing off at each
music.
Other.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. That's that real Negro spiritual. Okay. You don't know nothing about that. You hear Negro spiritual.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, you're calling out the dogs. I'm following the drinking gourd to Destiny Fulfilled.
Excuse me? They're singing Soldier down at the Delta? Excuse me?
Okay. You thought Harriet Tubman was going to freedom? She was actually going to Destiny.
I stand corrected or whatever that was. I love a history lesson. Drunk history? Help you.
You cannot turn on Through With Love and not just be like the Holy Ghost is in you, baby. Okay. I finally found it in God. Come on.
That set Michelle on her track, and I need her to not be on that track.
And I am like borderline agnostic, borderline atheist, raised Baptist. I don't know what the fuck is going on in my brain, but when I hear praise music, like that? Oh, what's
praise
on?
Music. Actually,
it's praise music.
Can I tell you my number one? I'm about to use the word beef. Do we have another word for that anymore? Okay. With Destiny's Child. I'm sorry. Their most atrocious thing to me. Of course, I love Destiny's Child. Like, almost flawless single listing, except their cover of Emotion by the Bee Gees sucks. I hate that cover. Where is the sex in it? The Bee Gees, that's about fucking. And we also have lustrous hair.
I feel like the Bee Gees version of Emotion is, you know, you're drawing a bath to have sex in it.
Yeah, sure. Precisely. Yes.
The Destiny's Child version of Emotion, you're drawing that bath to never wake up from it, if you get my drift.
Right.
It's a suicide song.
Yeah.
It is a very sad version of Emotion.
No, I just, yeah, I don't
know. It's like Emotion's taking me over. It's like, you sound depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, I need Vyvanse. Emotion's taking me over. Do Dixie Chicks or the Chicks count as a girl group? I think not. If you play instruments, I think that's a different thing.
Yeah.
TLC. That's another good girl group because you could pick a favorite one. They all presented something different, and then collectively they became more than the sum of their parts.
Yeah. They were sort of like the Planeteers.
Yeah.
You know, because like Left Eye had fire.
Yeah. She was Wheeler. Yes. Taking down her man's house. Yeah. They all had water, which was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I do love TLC. Let me tell you something, though. As big as TLC was, I'm going to bring up another song that like got me in trouble and started me on my journey of really curating playlists and gauging the vibe of a party.
Uh-huh.
I went bowling with some friends once in high school, and I put on Waterfalls
It's a famous
on the
song.
Jukebox.
Yeah. This is like the 1950s. You're like putting, okay, go ahead. You kicked it and you're the Fonz. Okay.
I was about to be tarred and feathered.
Really? Why?
Yes. I mean, I did go to this like all boys like Catholic high school.
Oh, you know? Okay.
And like these were not the evil people. These were just like the nerds and the art school kids. We were bowling, clearly. But they were like, you're bringing down the vibe.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I thought we all loved a mid-tempo jam about, you know, don't get AIDS or whatever the message of the song is.
I think that's what it was.
It really is the most mixed metaphor of all time.
The 90s really had a lot of songs that was sort of like, don't do drugs, don't have promiscuous sex, don't get AIDS, but didn't really say that. And so it was a lot of just, you know, what would you do if your son was at home crying on the floor? You know, it's like...
Great question.
It's like, take an AIDS test.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Again, which, by the way, that reminds me of Wilson Phillips, which has... Wilson Phillips' Impulsive is my favorite Wilson Phillips song. But again, in Hold On, when it seems to be empowering us and telling us to make good decisions, whatever, and to hold on for another day. And then suddenly they go into, you got yourself into your own mess. And I'm like, Carney Wilson is full of blame, and she doesn't even know me.
I really just know Hold On. Honestly, like, Wilson Phillips is a blind spot for me.
Oh, yeah. They hit hugely in 1 year. So they were like 1990, and then that's it. They had that. They had Release Me and Impulsive.
But if you want to talk about some white women who were getting it.
All right.
Expose.
Please. Expose is white women. I don't think I've ever seen them before.
I think one of them doesn't pass the paper bag test, but I think Expose is mostly white women.
Got it. Also, a girl group that has long gone forgotten.
Seasons Change?
But that's good.
That is a jam.
A long forgotten girl group that actually got an entire sketch on SNL about them in the past few years that people forgotten about. Climax. Mm-hmm. They have the song Meeting in the Ladies Room, but the best Climax song is The Men All Pause. I just want to say, first of all, that all these songs sound exactly the same. It's crazy to pick a favorite. But The Men All Pause, I mean, again, attitude. Attitude is the thing that, like, solidifies the reason we are listening to a girl group. You know, like, we're the bad bitches hanging out in the bathroom in high school kind of vibe.
I mean, Meeting in the Ladies Room is one of the cuntiest songs.
Yes.
Ever invented. I mean, it's maybe about cocaine, maybe about boxing this girl for stealing your man. And I just need people to hear the opening of this song, because this is maybe one of the most iconic openings of a song ever. It's just like, it's a spoken word. It's like this woman is telling you a story before you get into the song. She's like, I had to leave my condo to come to this. Well, I'm back. But this time, I'm with my man. And these women are putting their hands all over his Yamamoto Kanzai sweater that I bought. And I'm much, much unhappy about that. I'd hate to come down to their level and become a BW, a basic woman. But if they don't stop, it's going to get scandalous.
By the way, basic woman, it's the mid-80s to use basic in that way. Have you heard of progress? Have you heard of a revolution?
By the way, side note about Expose. That brings it back to my vested interest. Later, in their later years, Kelly Moneymaker joined Expose. And Kelly Moneymaker is a singer who is married to Peter Reckle, who plays Bo of Bo and Hope on Days of Our Lives.
Oh, whoa. You took me on a journey there. I was...
Okay. And she later started recording music for the show when... soap operas ran out of money to pay for real songs.
Got it.
You look at like 80s, 90s clips, like soap opera couples, like they were fucking to like Stephanie Mills.
Please.
And you know, Caught Up in the Rapture by Miss Andita, you know, like, but now it's like royalty free music.
I just want to say Bit by Bit by Stephanie Mills from the Fletch soundtrack. Really good. Also, you know what is a contender for me, best girl group song of all time? Because you're right. Attitude is one thing. Cunt is another. And we rarely get that from a girl group. But when we do, I'm so thankful. Vanity Six, Nasty Girl. Come on now. When that song comes on, you are ass to the floor.
I would say that one of the greatest things that Beyonce has done for us is... the multiple samples of Vanity Six's Nasty Girl that she's put into songs, because as of yet, you still can't fucking stream those songs.
Right. It's mysterious. And then Denise isn't with us to explain what happened to Vanity Six. So there you have it.
Yeah. So, I mean, because those are just such massive songs that I feel like so many people would love and we should be hearing more, but you can't hear them.
No. When I saw Prince in concert in 2011, I was excited to hear all of his songs, of course, but when he played a split second of Nasty Girl, please. Suddenly, I was wearing a blazer and leotard, like Denise, and I was absolutely shaking. And shaking it.
You know who we have not mentioned, who is one of the top selling girl groups of all time?
Come on, the Anders sisters.
Yeah, the Andrew sisters.
The Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, you know what? He brought it. He came with the bugle and he blew it. No, who?
No, like 3LW.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, they are most well known for having a fight in a KFC now. I'm sorry. It overshadowed the music. I'm sorry. Sometimes scandal overshadows the music.
That is the most hilarious group breakup I have ever heard.
Oh, yeah. Though Naturi Naughton, very talented. I enjoy Naturi Naughton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love her. Great in the Playboy Club.
Well, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Definitely. Naturi Naughton, yeah. Also in the remake of Fame, where she played the Irene Cara part. And then, of course, Irene Cara was in the original Sparkle, another movie about a girl group that is a lot darker than the version with Jordan Sparks and Whitney Houston, where Whitney Houston has a moment where she talks about passing away in a bathtub. I can't believe they kept that in the movie.
Yeah. We were doing a lot in 2012. You know?
Yeah. Confusing time. Confusing time. Anyway, tell us your favorite girl group songs. I'm sure there's stuff we missed. But actually, we had a good number of coordinates here. I'm happy with this. Yeah.
Speaking of Jordan Sparks, I saw Pearly Victorious last week, which is the update of Pearly, the original musical that hadn't been on Broadway, I think in about 60 years, maybe. It stars Leslie Odom Jr. Justin Guarini was there.
Whoa.
And I got to tell him I thought he was great in Once Upon a One More Time, that Britney Spears musical. He was truly the best part of that. I'm sad it closed, actually, because it was stupid and fun. Mm-hmm. And there was a woman sitting behind him, and I thought it was Jordan Sparks the entire time in the show. And I was like, it was very weird that they're not talking. I know that they were on different seasons, but don't they all know each other?
They're in a society.
Like, you know, like the original Power Rangers know like the ones who were on Zio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they hang. Yeah, there's a club.
And then I realized that it was Journey Smollett.
Ah.
And I thought Journey Smollett was Jordan Sparks for an entire Broadway show. And now I'm wondering what's wrong with me, or if that is a thing that, or if they've been confused before.
Mm. Eves Bai, you need to check yourself, okay? Get it together. This is what you've
I'll
done to my brain.
Show
I blame
myself
you.
Out.
I blame you. Oh, wait, I forgot one more girl group song I love. The Crystals, He's a Rebel. A great song. Great song.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, send us your faves. And now we'll be right back with arguably, aside from maybe Diana Ross and Beyonce, the greatest girl grouper who ever was, Jerry Halliwell Horner.
Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.
Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice?
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice?
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Our guest today has been, pardon the pun, spicing up our lives for generations, and she has not stopped for a second. She's not just a transcendent musician, she's a world-changing icon in her own right. She's also the accomplished author of the Eugenia Lavender series and is back with a new magical and mysterious novel, Rosie Frost and the Falcon Queen. We are honored today to be in the presence of Ginger Spice herself. Welcome to Keep It, Jeri Hallowell Horner.
Hello. Wow, what an entrance. Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
There's something even just about your speaking voice that is energizing off the top. I'm like, oh my God, she's here.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about how you first came to writing? Was like reading and writing something that kept your time, you know, when you were on tour, when you were on the bus or something? Or did you come to writing later in life?
No, actually, because my mum's out at work and we didn't have a lot of money. So I was always loved books, because with books, you can sort of go anywhere. You go on big adventures and, you know, when everyone else has gone on a real holiday. So that's what I loved about getting a book from a library. And then I studied English literature before music. And so I always felt confident, you know, during my music career with The Power of Words. You know, I knew I was no Mariah Carey, but I felt more confident in the writing bit. So, yeah, I always loved it.
I mean, you've been a children's author now for years and years. And by the way, when I say children's book, I mean, this is a 450-page book. I mean, it's not like there's six pictures in it and the book is over. This is like a book. Over the years, what have you learned about what kids appreciate in a book? How have you gotten to meet a lot of kids through your work and taken in their sort of insight?
Yeah, I always think of audience first. And just to be clear, this book, yes, it is for if you're 10, but it's also, you know, if you're 25 or 35, 45, it's ageless, timeless. A good book is anyone. And that's what I endeavoured to do with it. But also, I think, you know, not to patronise a kid just because they're younger. They're smart. They're so much smarter than you think. And so when the first few drafts, I think I gave it to my goddaughter and she said, I want my hero to be badass. Sorry if that's swearing. And I just thought, listen to her. Listen to that. You know, she's your reader. I just think kids are smarter than you think. You know, we can all get a little bit insulated by life experience. But on one hand said, listen. So, but this book is for everyone. My husband's read it and he's not a reader. And he was like, ooh, it's much better than I thought. I had to turn the book. I couldn't find out what happened next.
Any book that has a character screaming, these shoes are Prada, that's for not just kids, that's for me. So I'm happy to be here for it.
Okay, so there's a character called Ottilie. And I always like to, you know, like smash things together. So on what, you know, it's based on an island called Bloodstone, which is like Jurassic Park, but for endangered animals. And, you know, there's a school there, so which it was built 500 years ago by Queen Elizabeth I. In honor of her late mother, Anne Boleyn, who was just incredible, but she got shamed for being smart and incredible. But Queen Elizabeth builds this school and her heirs, instead of having children, she says, right, these pupils, they're going to be my heirs, these smart kids. Anyway, 500 years later, you've got Rosie Frost gets sent there and there are all sorts of pupils there. And one of them is Ottilie. And she's that typical mean girl archetype, which she... You know, she's sort of a bit, oh, ew, you'd see her. But, you know, they're three-dimensional characters that you know this person. You might see yourself in them. And they all have their sort of, and no one is good, no one is bad. No one's perfect in this. And they all have their arc. It's an adventure story if you want it. Or you might find the power you never knew you had through it.
Mm-hmm. You know, meeting new younger audiences, you know, through being an author, I guess, what do you feel you've learned about young women, young fans, going from having such younger fans when you started in the Spice Girls to now having a newer, younger audience who reads your books?
What have I learned is the question.
Yeah, just maybe, you know, just about what you know, young women consume or like what they like, what they're like as fans.
I think women or girls, boys, we're more alike than different. And I really felt that actually, if you can see it, you can be it. So I felt really it was important to have characters in there that, you know, the boy's, the character Charlie, you know, he's strong, but he does cry. Boys do cry. And that's okay. If you can see it, you can be it. Right? But the girls saved the boys, you know. So we're everything. And no one is perfect. And I think that's much more a modern day hero that we can all relate to. There's no alpha here. It's a real story about finding the courage you never knew you have. And I think we, regardless of age, you can all relate to that. You think, oh yeah, I'm not perfect, but I'm trying.
I have to say about you, in this book, I noticed like it's full of these big personalities too. And you, I really can only think of Madonna to compare this to. And it is not lost on me that your child's middle name is Madonna. That is not lost on me. That your personality right off the bat, when I first heard who you are, that must have been 1997, had this X factor quality of just like, oh, like she is the party. She is the energy. Like I am so attracted, whatever's happening with her, I've got to follow what it is, music, whatever. And do you feel that like you had that quality your entire life? Like just there's something kind of magnetic about you that people responded to, or did you have to kind of come into your own?
That's very flattering. And thank you. You could be my mirror in the morning. you know what? I think when you're young, this is just my experience and I don't have the answers. And if anybody's connecting with me, that's beautiful and flattering. But for me, I think when I was younger, I had sort of that teenage bravado, but actually it was America that taught me you're allowed to follow your dreams. And my mother was out at work and I was watching the A-Team, or it was actually what Rocky said, and Charlie's Angel. You're allowed, it doesn't matter who you are, you're allowed to go for it. You know, and that sort of really global optimism. America gave me that. So it was taught to me. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to give this a go. And so at the beginning, it was like teenage bravado. And then I think through my 30s, I was like feeling a little bit wobbly. I'd fallen down. But I've always been very introspective and tried to learn and connect. I find everybody interesting. Everybody's got their story. And I think as I've got older, I would say, you know, I'm learning and I'm still learning it and I'm still getting it wrong. But if you stand in truth, your words have power. Like, it's just my experience. That's all I've got now is experience. And so I think that's a nice quality to have. It's just like, yeah, this is me. You know, I don't care whether you're the postman or the president. Let's just get on with it, you know?
Speaking so much about, you know, the introspection in your writing, I wanted to ask you a bit, you know, if you still feel a bit angry about the leaking of like your country album, which was so personal in 2016, and whether that's a project that you felt like you wanted to revisit, or if the entire incident of it, you know, ending up online sort of made you want to move away from that.
Do you know, I think we have to learn to move on in life, don't we? And stuff happens. Mm-hmm. I learned, and it's hard, like rejection is God's protection in a way. And that, it wasn't how I'd planned it to happen, but I always love writing and there's no point being cross, is there? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm learning, if I'm cross, someone said to me is like anger or resentment is like drinking poison and expecting them to die. The only person that's going to, I'm going to suffer from that. So it's just like life happens, you know? So it's one of those things. And the other thing is, who hasn't made a mistake here? I'm always making mistakes. And can we give each other grace? That's quite a nice thing, isn't it? A little bit of grace is quite nice.
Also, I just think about how much you've been through in your career, the like unbelievable highs that even extremely successful artists can, like the level you've achieved is just so extreme. And I'm wondering, who do you even relate to in the universe? Like, who do you think like, oh, I, you know, as Jerry Halliwell Horner, that person understands where I've been or where I'm going?
Anyone.
Really?
Because I think it's on a human level, I suppose. The reality is this is the truth in my experience, that if you put 10 people together from all different walks of life, we're more alike than different. You know, after I don't know, 10 minutes. Yeah, you can go, oh, I've experienced this. But I think we all just want to connect. We're all a little bit frightened. We all want to be loved. Those sort of basic fundamental things are the same. But I, you know, I always look, you know, from the past. Do you know who I love? It's Maya Angelou. She's amazing. Like, she, it was incredible the way she did a number of things, that, and she gave us permission that you're allowed to. You know, she wrote, she danced, she sang. She you know, she was a philosopher, she was a writer. So, you know, I was, a lot of the times I look from the past, but we can learn from the future as well.
Are there any other authors like Maya Angelou whose works might have been particularly inspiring for you when you, you know, really learned to love literature?
You know, I can read anything and enjoy it for what it is. Because I also respect anybody that's given it a go, because it's not easy. It really isn't. But it, what I do like about it is that you do get to, in a world where, we, you know, what control do we really have? You know, we can't control whether someone likes us, the weather, whether the relationship goes our way or the job goes our way. But when you write, you get to decide who lives, who dies, who loves, who cries, all sorts of things. So it's quite liberating. You get like, yeah. So I read, and this is not his style of writing that I do, but he wrote this book, Stephen King, of how to write. And there was some tips in there that I used.
That's one of my favorite books. Yes.
It's good,
on writing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really useful, because he talks about locking yourself in a really dark room. So there's nothing that can pull you out, which is really interesting. So you write as well?
Yes. My first book actually comes out next year in June. So it's a book
amazing.
Of essays.
Amazing. What's it called? Yes.
Pure Innocent Fun. So
say it again.
Pure Innocent Fun.
Pure Innocent
Random House Fun. Is publishing it. Yes.
Amazing. And what's
Thank
it about?
You. Essays about me in high school. I went to a sort of all-boys Catholic high school in the 90s and early 2000s. So, yeah.
That sounds really good. Really interesting.
Thank you. I hope so.
Yeah, I think having a go at it, it's not easy, because lots of people procrastinate or are scared, because it's very vulnerable writing. It's like putting your heart, you know, and saying, do you like me? It's like really being, showing yourself. So that sounds, and I think that the best things are when, or real heroes are when you're vulnerable. That's
yes.
Modern day. That's modern day. You know, there's no airbrushing. So well done you. I've tried to do that with Rosie. So, yeah, you'll see.
Speaking of Maya Angelou, who was at one point a Tony nominated actress, you from time to time appear, you act like semi-regularly. And is that a similarly vulnerable process? How naturally does acting come to you?
I studied acting when I was pre-music. And the kind of act is Stanislavski. And I also studied when I was in Los Angeles in my 30s. And it's kind of like being the paint in someone else's picture. And the kind of acting that I, you know, like to do is quite real. And so it's a privilege, but it is quite scary, because, yeah, when you do it, and if you're working with really amazing people, then, you know, there's no hiding. So, yeah, it's quite challenging to do it. And it's particularly if you just love the story that's to be involved with, you know. So
it's interesting that you talk about vulnerability in writing and in acting, but, like, would you say performing as a singer is, like, a different, like, you get to sort of inhabit a persona more? It's not as vulnerable making?
Mm-hmm. I think there's different kinds, isn't
yeah.
there? Different temperatures. Because you can put on, I think we all put on our Batman suit. Do you know what I mean? We can all hide behind layers. Do you know what I mean? Whether you work in a bank or, you know, or you're a teacher, you can put on your shirt and tie. But if you're on the stage, you can put on your sort of regalia to sort of, and we can all hide behind that. But sometimes the most powerful things are when it's just vulnerable. And I think sometimes it's nice to have a bit of both, isn't it?
If it's doable, yes. If you can do both, that's nice.
Yeah, a bit of both. Yeah. I think that we, you know, there's room for everything. So.
You've now, over the years, have done so many different types of music. Do you have, what would you say was the most vulnerable making music to produce?
I think probably my first album, but there was a unconsciousness to it.
You know, Your solo album?
Yeah, I think so, because I was just there's nothing to hide behind, no bells and whistles. And some of the stuff I look back, I think, well, that was pretty brave. But there's, I think there's a naivety with it as well. I think sometimes as you get older, you can be a bit more, yeah. How old are you?
Me, I'm 37.
Okay, you look younger, actually.
Oh, thank you. I'll put that right on my tombstone that you said that. Thank you so much. But by the way, speaking of your first solo album, I think Look At Me is such a fabulous song to this day. It, ahead of its time, like the message of it, it's like right in your face too. There's a lot to think about. And I'm wondering if you, if that's a particular feather in your cap, that song.
I'm proud of it, very much so. Yeah, I mean, I think the writing of it is, you know, I always think writing in any way, you know, whether it's a song or a book is like always like a voice for the voiceless. You can express how people are feeling. So in Rosie Frost, these four rules are given. So Queen Elizabeth, she's only three when her mother gets executed, and her mother, she knows she's going to die, gives her these four rules. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, right? And these four rules, I think, are timeless rules, and that can transcend to anyone. And so Queen Elizabeth first uses these rules, and then, like, I can use these rules, you can use these rules. And the first one is have courage. The second one is united we stand. Three is never give up, serve your kingdom. I'm like, okay. And the fourth one is, which really is very in keeping with what the song Look At Me is, the fourth one is to thine own self be true. If you like not these rules, make up your own. That's Shakespeare. So I think that messaging of be yourself is timeless.
Yeah, I mean, that Lewis is absolutely right. I mean, and that I still listen to Schizophrenic to this day.
Please.
I was spitting my Chica Latino today, which is such a very fun song. And speaking of timeless too, how have you loved the fact that your cover of the Weather Girls' song has just been such a truly like such a gay anthem forever now?
I mean, it's pretty. I'm completely flattered. Yeah, amazing. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always had a lot of gay men in my life. So, and so I find that taste, you know, very flattering that they connect. And the Weather Girls, you know, so they're big singers to take on that song. That's very nice.
But also, that's another way in which you're like Madonna, in which like there's never any questioning that this woman knew gay men. Just like so many like stars have to like tell their fans like, oh yeah, I'm cool with gay people. But it was like, you know, you absolutely know Jerry Halliwell Horner is like up with the gays. Absolutely.
You know what it is, I think if you have experienced any marginalization or felt any sort of, I don't know, in any way, so any difference, if you just felt it, I don't know. I always feel like anyone that feels, you know, they've had to overcome something and be brave about it. I feel everyone should, I like it when everyone supports each other, even if I don't understand. Do you know what I mean? I want to sort of extend my hand in yours and say, do you know what? You're brave and it's all right. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? We'll work it out. And sometimes, and I've seen this, you know, the pendulum swings in that direction before it will just tick in the middle and we find balance. But I think, you mm-hmm. know, when we go through those process of, you know, finding equality, I think it's nice if we can have some support and grace with each other. Not perfect, because we're still learning, I think.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah. I think maybe random question then. Do you maybe remember the first time you stepped foot in sort of like, maybe it was a performance the Spice Girls did or something, like in a gay club, or even just setting foot in one post Spice Girls, where you could just feel the energy of everyone in this room is realizing, oh my God, Jerry is here. Ginger Spice is in this bar.
I've been in a bar in New York where it was Alan Cumming's do you know who Alan Cumming is?
Yes, of course. He's been on the show. Yes.
Yeah, he took me on in there. And I think we sang at the piano. I'm just thinking that. I was on very sort of, I don't know, very supported in that community authentically. And also, there's sort of, on one hand, you can have the stereotype of the flamboyancy, but also the tenderness and the strength in there. It's like that duality. It's a mix that comes through.
Who would you say in the music universe you look up to the most? Is there somebody you've been like a long-standing fan of where you're still like an intense fan to this day?
Well, I admire anybody that gets it. Do you know what I was listening to today? It was Billy Joel, My Life. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
That's just such good. That's timeless. That's brilliant. And then I heard Stevie Nicks. She's still going. You think, go on. But then I admire...
They did a show together in Boston recently. Right. Yeah.
Good for them, you know. And they're both such good writers. And then, but then, you know, up and coming, I was looking at, who was it? Ice Spice. And I just said, you know, I like her. Just there's something innocent and raw about what she's doing. It's like, yeah, go for you.
We could make her like the honorary Six Spice girl, you know, Ice Spice.
I feel there's good. More than six. No, I think that there's a band of everyone in there.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And very nice to meet you both.
Yeah.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
The Golden Bachelor has premiered and people are loving it. Because you know what I love? Just grandparents hugging up on each other.
Oh, please. Wearing like a tawny robe.
Yeah. I watched it. I think it's cute. I don't know if I'm going to keep watching it. I don't really have an appetite for The Bachelor. I tried briefly when they had the first Black Bachelorette, Rachel Lindsay, and then I watched a couple of the other ones, but I just sort of fell off. Like, it's just not my flavor of reality show, you know?
I just feel like that particular genre for me, like, we peaked in terms of being too self-aware on camera, I think. And I don't know, like, the storylines, unlike Survivor, where I feel like people find new ways to, like, manipulate each other and play the game and get better at the game, make the game better. This is, like, pretty standard. Like, a specific type of personality always signs up for this. Like, you're rarely going to find anything new or inventive in the format. Unless, of course, there's like an incredibly problematic person who emerges or something, you know. But that said, yeah. Golden Bachelor, that has more of a chance for me than the other seasons do, because I am interested in seeing old people on reality TV. Maybe they aren't as self-aware as all these like 20 and 30 somethings who play the game all the time.
That's fair. These are probably people who applied for original seasons of The Real World and didn't make it on.
They're not that. They're older than that.
Maybe. I guess what's the age of if you're like 60 on this show right now?
Yeah.
You would have been 30 years ago when The Real World premiered.
But they were like 22 on that show. So I think like people on the first seasons of Real World are probably in their early to mid 50s.
You can't tell me Eric Nice wasn't 54.
That was a man, I have to say. And we kept him on MTV for quite a while. Yeah.
You know what MTV the should grind? Really bring back?
Woo, the that's grind it.
Or
that's
spring it. Or spring break. Like, you know what?
Spring break.
We're
gonna
get to dating shows. We're gonna get to dating shows, but I have to tell you that it's actually weird. I need to now that I'm in the edits, I can't believe I didn't write an essay about this. But one of parts of my gay awakening, truly, when I'm coming to terms with I'm attracted to men and you're seeing them on TV, there was really nothing like turning on MTV in the summer and just seeing like hot guys dancing on the beach on MTV spring break.
Or like that time where they were like, they put like whipped cream on each other and they're like blurring out.
Yeah.
The light. It's like, Jesus, catapult me through like, adolescence. Jesus Christ.
Because Jerry Spring, it was like Springer Break.
Yes, right.
Jerry Springer would host it and they would play like sexy games or whatever with each other. Definitely ones where people had to lick whipped cream off of men's chests.
Truly, or, like what your parents' worst fear in terms of what my kids who are 11 and 12 could be watching. Worst fear shit.
We would love to see a documentary of adults looking back at MTV Spring Break footage of themselves and being aghast. But they're kind of lucky that that's at least one of those things that seems lost to time.
Yeah. And maybe even a little innocent. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's on YouTube somewhere, but if you were, chances of your kid finding that or anyone else that you worked with finding it now is probably pretty low.
Right. I want the way we had that movie 54 about the Studio 54 days. I want that same movie, but about Senior Frogs. You know, I want to know who was there getting the giant margarita, who was getting up on the bar. Maybe even the Girls Gone Wild people. It feels like that could that we could stand to hear an update about what happened to those people too. But speaking of blurred nakedness, what's notable about this new dating show, Naked Attraction, which first of all isn't that new, it's been airing in England for years. They pushed it onto Max. It's suddenly the most popular show on Max. And it is, even though you are judging potential mates based only on how they look below the waist in a full frontal way, I would describe it as a pretty quaint show. Like, it's not like, people are not like horny to death on this show, weirdly. It's just like, I'm observing a body, I have something to say about the body, and now I'm going to move you on to the next round.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like working in a funeral home in that respect, you know? Like
Yes, right. You're an embalmer looking for a new project, yes.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of one of my old favorite reality series, Hot or Not.
Sure. Oh, God. Hot or Not.
Bring that back.
It does feel crazy to me that we haven't brought back Next, which I think is just, first of all, the dates are so short and therefore like you keep your attention or whatever. But the brutality of eliminating people as they get off a bus, which by the way is already a humiliating act. If you're stepping down from a bus, you're not looking like amazing. You know what I mean? So in that moment, if you are then eliminated, you just could not be any lower. And I have to, and I'm not somebody who craves awkwardness in any media. I don't like, you know, I can't even sit through The Office where like there's people are exchanging glances. I don't like that shit. Here, it's so awkward. I have to watch.
Not exchanging glances.
Next was, I think, the best of all those shows of like the Room Raiders and Parental Control and stuff. Yeah.
No, Next is definitely a show that I feel like could be brought back on TikTok now.
Yeah, right.
It's such a short show.
Totally. Yeah. Episodes can end in like 30 seconds. Right.
Yeah. And the best part were the gay episodes where they get eliminated and then they just start making out on the bus with each other or something.
I can't explain that. I truly find that to be progressive television. Just like, we're not going to change the format of this show at all to make it, you know, we're not going to change the format of the show. Gays are as welcome here as straight people. And also, all right, whatever. Go fuck in the van. That's great. Enjoy yourselves. You know, they just didn't mind. I don't know. It was kind of rad.
And you also got to see varying versions of gay stereotypes on the show.
Oh, Jesus. And of course, it's the mid-2000s, so everybody has the swoopy ninth place American Idol contestant hair.
Yes. There's always the skinny, twinkish character who, if they are the person who is running the dates, they get to be bitchy about people when they get off the bus. But then they become the victims other times if it's a very masculine bro who is doing the dating. They're like, oh, he's too femme for me. Like, next. My favorites And it didn't happen that often, gay or straight, when someone got off the bus and would next themselves. They're like, next.
Done with this. It is like a weird proposition. Like, oh, I have to be forced to want this person, but they can eliminate me. Like, it's so weird. It's such a weird power dynamic.
And if you hang out on the date, if you win, what do you get? The most you get $1 for each minute you spend. The most people would be winning would be about $30.
It's pathetic. It's like
$30 or the date.
It's literally like the dance marathon and They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Just like, oh, if you survive long enough, you'll make $36.
I think there was actually a Reddit thread about this once where someone who was on the show explained basically that this was also pre-Instagram, pre-social media, right? So he said that it was stupid to not take the money at the end of these dates because even if you bond with the person, you're never going to see them again.
Right.
Because MTV doesn't arrange a second date or something. And if you're in town for next or whatever, these people live in different cities. So you bond with someone in Cleveland and you live in Florida, take the fucking money because you're not going to see that person again.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll go and fuck them later that day, but you literally will not have another date with that person.
Yeah, enjoy writing them a letter eventually or whatever. No, it gave me the feeling of like, it was a lot of people who still lived with their parents in the valley. Like, that's exactly, like, that was the dating pool. Like, I have blonde tips. I'm wearing 2 to 3 polo shirts. My belt is spangled. And I'm talking about the gay contestants specifically. But, man, to have that time immortalized that way, I mean, just we absolutely dressed the worst there. Yeah. Oh, the swoopiest hair.
Yeah, the double polos.
Yes, right. By the way, they play with this on Snatch Game of Love, but the original dating game is still a pretty good format, you know, where it's like one person is asking, you know, questions with innuendo to 3 awaiting contestants and they can't see them and they can only judge by their voices. Because I think secretly voice is key to attraction a lot of the time. So it's sort of also, like something about that really works.
Also, bring back Singled Out. We did with Joel Kinnebuster and Kiki.
On Quibi.
Quibi, which, you know, didn't anything happen on Quibi? I allegedly wrote a TV show for Nicole Richie. No one's ever seen.
Well, also, with that particular single reboot, because it was on Quibi, it was so chopped down. You didn't get to just, like, watch, like, the guys and root for the guys and pick people. Like, there was something about Singled Out that really fits a full half hour. Like, you're on a journey with these people, and you pick a favorite, and you see how you're judging their dynamic. Will this relationship work?
You know what I would actually sort of love in a concept for a dating show is we love a show like Big Brother, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I like a show like Love Island, but Love Island sometimes gets a bit too boring for me, and I kind of hate the showmances on Big Brother because, one, it's always just a boring straight couple. Even when it's someone fun, people I like Corey and America currently on Big Brother this season, it's still weird because it's happening within the context of the other people playing the game, and then you cut to all this dumb showman shit. I would love a blend of that where it is a competitive game, but there are more couples on the show. People attempting to create a relationship or bond or whatever. So you get the romance element of people getting to know each other and that sort of relationship building happening, but you're also still playing a game that involves scheming and manipulating and voting people out.
Which, by the way, reminds me of what I want, which is an all-gay season of Big Brother. Just have a bunch of gay guys, and then, like, there's always the potential of a hookup element between these people who will then be backstabbing each other. I mean, it's going to be murders. You want people to be killed on television, right? When you see these shows, you know. I'm thinking like I'm running the television network in the movie network, right? We want, like, the maximum carnage. And I feel like that, how has that not been done? Particularly in, like, England, where they just air whatever. Like, nothing is homophobic on television over there.
Right. Not CBS, because they don't want gay people having sex on live feeds.
That's what I mean. I mean, like, we discussed this before, I believe, with Roxanne Gay. Like, they never have multiple gay people there, and I realize it's because if there's a gay relationship, they would have to air it. You know?
Yes. And there's also the idea that, you know, people would be hooking up, and they would break up couples, et cetera, or they just swap partners. That's why people say that a Love Island or something wouldn't work with gays. But I do think it would, because one, a show like Love Island, the concept is you have to be in a couple, and then America is voting, or the UK is voting. The people watching the show have a heavy part in deciding who wins.
Right.
Yes. And so if you are constantly swapping from person to person, then you're not going to look good to the viewing audience. There is an incentive to pick a partner and sort of stay with them. And also, this is the implication that there wouldn't also be people who are very much hardline monogamists or just have a different view on dating or whatever. So I think that that would be a very interesting way to watch different versions of gay people on TV. But, you know, it reminds me of one of my favorite shows that I feel like we should bring back, which is Boy Meets Boy.
I don't think I ever saw an episode of that. Is that Bravo?
Yes, it was Bravo. Okay. It was basically a Bachelor, where a gay guy had a pool of gay men to date, and he had to pick one and was eliminating one each episode. But the twist was half of the men were straight.
Deceptors.
And yes. And so
infiltrators.
If he picked a straight guy at the end, the straight guy won all the money. And
that's
he'd
so insane. Also, I think there should have been even a darker twist. Like the straight guy gives them a phone and says, you have to come out to a homophobic relative.
But I think that's a fun concept for a show.
I mean, there was something in the 2000s where we had all these reality shows because people discovered how cheap they were to make. You know, VH1 is flourishing, MTV is flourishing, all these cable networks are doing well, and they're just trying shit out. You know, they're just like, what if we made this guy do this? What if I feel like it was such a gonzo time.
Gay straight or taken?
Right. Again,
do
I want to say
that one.
Tequila for a time was something you wanted on television, based on what happened in the 2000s.
They had that one queer season of Are You the One? My friend Remy was on it.
That was good. I watched that.
But they never made another one. So
maybe we weren't good enough for it. Are You the One Society? No, you aren't.
Baby MTV was just like, let's keep airing Ridiculous all day.
A plan that apparently is working for them, or doing something for them, because it is ongoing.
All right, when we are back, it's time for Keep It. And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It. Lewis.
Yes.
What's yours?
I'd like to be formally asked before I launch into it. My Keep It. This came out like last week or so, but Alicia Keys, who has won, I'll say quite a few Grammys, quite a few. So I would associate her with creativity, with, you know, let me do that. So I associate her with creativity and, you know, not infuriating us with choices she makes creatively. Until now.
I know you haven't associated her with vocals.
No, she is an alto who would like to be other things, and some should say she should remain an alto. Moving on.
Great performer, songwriter.
Yes, exactly. Young performer, quoth Aretha Franklin. Yeah. as first reported on by TMZ, there's an application waiting to be assigned to an attorney for a trademark for her new tea brand, Alicia Teas. Sometimes there's like puns that you just say them and it hurts your feelings. I say Alicia Teas and I'm frowning. You can hear the frown come on my face. It's just, it's too sad to say Alicia Teas. And then I was like, who would propose something like Alicia Teas? And then I remembered this woman named herself Alicia Keys. She named herself Alicia Keys. That's not her name. She plays the piano. She calls herself Alicia Keys. This is like the dorkiest human act of all time. And now she's taking it a step further. She's like, I love this pun so much. I'm Alicia Teas now. Darling. Or should I say Darjeeling? You've gone too far.
What's funny is her real name is Alicia Cook. So imagine she became a chef. She wouldn't have had to change her name.
Right.
Alicia Cooks.
That would be cute.
That would be cute.
She could do her signature and then just add like a red S at the end.
I personally love the name Alicia Teese. That's very on brand for me.
Actually, it is better than what Cher called her gelato company, which is Cher-lato. I just have this feeling Cher knows gay people and knows people who can do a better pun than that. So
Cher a cone.
Anything. Right. Cher and Cher alike.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't. And
I
also,
didn't know
of
Cher
course,
had an ice cream company.
By the way, yes, it's new. And then they had trucks go around LA. By the way, did we hear that Cher may have hired somebody to kidnap her own son to prevent him from getting into being engaged to somebody?
I did hear about that. I did not investigate further because I feel like if Cher hired anybody to kidnap someone, she was probably doing the right thing.
Yeah. I trust her judgment. Also,
yeah.
I would love it if the guy jumped out of the van to do the kidnapping and then he just slaps him and says, snap out of it, which just sounds like what the assignment was.
We call that a moonstrucking.
Yeah. Officer, I was moonstruck. Ira, what is your keep it this week?
My keep it goes to NSYNC.
I saw them on Hot Ones, which I was actually a little bit of a bastard towards last week. Hot Ones is a fine show. Go ahead, Ira.
You were rude as hell.
Yeah. It's just the cadence of the questions I don't like. It's the questions themselves are great.
I am saying keep it to NSYNC because, unfortunately, I like another song from a fucking Trolls soundtrack. Like, what are we
God.
Doing here?
No.
The Trolls 3, even Trollier, whatever the name of this fucking movie is.
Trollio Iglesias.
It is very Can't Stop the Feeling coded.
Sure.
It starts out with one of the worst things in music, a whistle tone. Oh. I know Gay is like that Hillary Duff Spark song, which has the whistles in it. They're constantly talking about it on Twitter. Like there's no other song that's ever been created by a white woman. But it starts with a whistle and it gets into, you know, a boppy beat. It's very happy. It's very cheerful. But man, it's just so nice hearing their voices again. And it's nice hearing Justin singing a pop song again. And, you know, not trying to be Morgan Wallen or whoever the fuck.
Yeah.
And
I just, right.
It's a nice song. It's not a good song. I mean, some of the lyrics in the second verse are something like, you like the bass down low. You like it nice and slow. I want to lose control. Like, who fucking wrote that?
That does feel a bit mid-90s R&B.
Yeah.
Montel Jordan or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. We've heard this collection of lyrics before. It almost feels like it was ChatGPT'd.
Yeah,
but
right.
It sounds good. I've been listening to it on fucking repeat all morning, actually.
Do they all sound good? Does everybody
they all sound
well?
Good.
Oh, that's nice.
They sound great. And it kind of makes me even angrier now because are we getting something else? They've been doing Hot Ones.
Oh, we must be.
They
we
did the
be.
MTV. I need a reunion tour or I need a Vegas residency. I'm going to need a real album though. And if I'm going to get a real album, I don't want it to sound like this. This is cute for one song, but we need Timbo. We need Pharrell back.
Mm-hmm. Space Cowboys,
sure
please come back
okay.
out. Yes.
Candy Burris.
Yeah.
We need your pin game again, okay?
There was a rumor for a moment that NSYNC was going to be a part of the Super Bowl halftime show. Obviously, now it's going to be Usher. And to be fair, we don't know who Usher is going to bring out, but it's Usher for now. And
I'm sure
I
he's not bringing out Justin Timberlake.
I would assume that's not the case, correct. But it did strike me funny at the time because NSYNC being at the Super Bowl does make kind of sense. But I have to say, if you live in West Hollywood, you literally just see Lance Bass out every weekend. And I was just like, wow, this guy can just be upstairs at a bar in West Hollywood most nights of my life. And now he is the headliner at the Super Bowl. What a crazy life. Like, I believed
yeah.
it.
I mean, we talked about girl groups this week, but NSYNC is, that's my life. Like, NSYNC was for me. NSYNC was my group. Like, I fucking loved NSYNC so much.
I can't even
I
pick a favorite boy band.
NSYNC.
I can't, because, like, also, that gets a little, Like with girl groups, there weren't many where they played instruments. But for instance, like Hanson, they played instruments and I would still call them a boy band, you know?
So, I'm not listening to no fucking Hanson.
Oh, they had the songs. I don't want to hear that.
I do not. I do not like Umbop. I don't like it. I've never liked it. I don't want to hear it.
I'm not a performer on this podcast anymore. Good night.
What the fuck are they even saying in that song?
Oh, honey, let's not even get into their iconic SNL performance one and two sketch with Helen Hunt, where they she holds them at gunpoint in an elevator and says, "Are you aware that the song Mbop has been played 25 million times this year?" Yeah. Helen Hunt holding you at gunpoint. Yes, that is television.
Paul Reiser actually talked about that, but we had to cut it from the episode for legal reasons.
Wait, he was scared.
Helen threatened to sue.
Yeah.
He said, "She's going to come after me." Take that out.
Okay, I need to listen to this song, though. I haven't heard it yet. So,
yeah, it's called Better Place.
All right. You know what? When the Backstreet Boys came back last, that was pretty good, too.
It was. And honestly, I mean, the chorus is also very, like, I don't care if the world spins faster. Like, let me take you to a better place. I think it's about global warming, actually.
Oh, okay, sure.
I think it's about escaping this dying planet to go to space where the space
cowboys are.
Yeah. Yippee-yi-yo, yippee-yi-yay.
Yes. We have the same vision. Get to the space cowboys.
But not that movie.
Oh, absolutely not. No, that was the first movie that came out when I was in high school. That was summer of 2000. I'm like, wow, that's what we're doing with Tommy Lee Jones now, right? Actually, that's funny because he's a big dick. So put him in movies like Space Cowboys just to fuck with him.
This is like the second week in a row that you've referenced Tommy Lee Jones being an asshole.
Everybody knows it. It's not new information. He's a big dick.
I don't think I really know anything about him.
Oh.
Besides the fact that he was in Batman and The Fugitive.
Look at him in the audience of any award show and you'll never see somebody having a worse time. It's like, girl, have some fucking champagne. You're like sitting next to Annette Bening or something. We're all having a good time.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's our show this week.
Yeah. We kept it not current this week. We didn't even bring up Taylor being at a football game again, which, by the way, guys, is boring. I know you guys want it to be exciting. She just is standing there. And then now she's standing next to Blake Lively, who has to pretend to know what football is, too. She doesn't care.
I almost made it my keep it this week, but I just don't want to talk about it.
I know. There's nothing to say.
It's very... Who cares?
What am I looking at? Why are you so excited? Also, wasn't the real story that Hugh Jackman was potentially there next to Antony? That's news. Excuse me, the Today Show. Can we get on this? TMZ?
Antony, come back.
Yeah.
And tell
us. My God. Our friend, Antony. Yes. Please come back on the show and talk about guac and this.
Yeah. Talk about anything.
Yeah.
And this, you know? But yeah, I don't want to talk about like this. I was entertained at first, but now I feel like it is all people are talking about. And I know this summer there was the Eras tour and people kept talking about that. And it made sense because she was on tour and everyone was going to the concert. It was a very big moment this summer, but now it just feels very snake eating its own tail. Like,
yeah.
The media is just constantly talking about her, and that is why we're talking about her.
Right. Also,
about her because you're talking about her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's one of those things also where I have to give the woman credit. When your whole game is relatability, and like you just stick with that for years and years and years, she has really gotten the fans to be like, literally, if she's laughing, people are like, I laugh too. That's so relatable. Like, it's like they're so obsessed with the micro occurrences, just seeing this woman exist, that it's like intriguing no matter what she does. It's actually it's an impressive long game if she did this on purpose.
I mean,
on purpose.
It is akin to white women eating a salad, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
Just do you remember that website?
Yeah. Oh, wait, as in the Getty Images thing?
Yeah, white women eating salad. It was it was during that era of websites where memes. So, like, memes were on, like, a whole website was a meme.
Got it. Yes.
You know, like, blackpeoplelovus.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
Chelsea
mm-hmm.
Peretti.
Yes.
And Jonah Peretti.
Right.
It's their website. But then, you know, memes broke free.
Thank you for that history lesson. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, That's the Alicia T for the week.
I hate you. We've gone oolong this episode, and now we need to get out of here.
You're Darjeeling me.
I already did a Darjeeling pun. Move it along. The Darjeeling is limited, honey. We already hit it.
Thank you to Jerry Hollowell Horner for being here this week, and we'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. And our associate producer is Malcolm Whitfield. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III and Louis Vertel.
This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to our digital team, Megan Patzel and Rachel Gajewski, and to Matt DeGroot and David Tolles for production support every week.
And as always, Keep It is recorded in front of a live studio audience.